Welcome to our podcast. We trust you find this encouraging. For more information about NCCF, log on to newcovenantchristianfellowship.com. Thank you and God bless.
Sarah and Brian have been just such a great presence in our community, not only here in Woodland Park, but also down in the Springs, and their community extends worldwide. And Sarah's going to share with you a little bit about that. And after Sarah shares some things, I'm going to just kind of fill in the blanks about why we do what we do here at New Covenant related to having someone like Sarah come and share. Because I'll just give you the little the teaser on that. We really, really have it in our hearts that you would connect with the people who are doing the work of ministry, not only here but abroad. And so we wanted you to hear Sarah's heart, what's going on. There's also a fundraising campaign she's kind of rallying some help with. And so this is a way for us to hear what's going on and maybe connect with that and pray about how you might be involved in that. So here is Sarah.
Thank you. It's good to be with you all this morning. I don't always get to be here because we travel a lot for what we do around the world and in the U.S., but when we do get to be here, it is so good for my spirit and for my soul to be in this fellowship. So thank you all for the honor of sharing with you today. As Chris said, we are getting ready to be a part of a really cool opportunity down in Colorado Springs and in the Pikes Peak region called the Indy Gives campaign, which is in partnership with the independent newspaper down in the Springs. And they provide this really amazing platform for area nonprofits to raise awareness about what they're doing, to gain a media presence and platform, and then to invite the community to support the efforts. And so I had reached out to Chris and said, hey, do you think New Covenant would be interested in helping us with a matching grant that we garner ahead of time to sort of leverage donations when the campaign actually starts in November? And I loved his response because it is so indicative of who we are as a family. And he just very kindly said, you know, I don't want to insulate Yobel from this community and the ability for Yobel to share what you're doing here to our fellowship. And I don't want to insulate Yobel from what this community would want to know more of or how this community would want to get involved or invest in the ministry that God's invited you to be a part of. And so with very little to do, here I am on Sunday morning, 2 days later, ready to share. And I just enjoy that about our family, that this is a place that there's very little red tape or politic. There's just an invitation to do or to be where God has us. So thank you again to Chris and to you guys. What's really on my heart to share with you all this morning has very much to do with where I am in process with the Father right now, coming back from East Africa. I've been home for just over 2 weeks. We got to go for about a month to Rwanda and to Uganda. We've been to Uganda probably 7 times as an organization. I think we've been working there for a really long time. And that is one of the dearest places in the world to me. Vern over here knows how great it is. He's been with us. And Rwanda was new for us this year. And as an organization, our mission is to really see empowerment happen sustainably in the developing world in some of the most impoverished places by encouraging business training and development. And that's really what God's given us to do. And honestly, if you'd told me I'd be doing this 8 years ago, I would have laughed at you because I have not a stitch of business training. I have taken one business class in my entire life, and I thought I'd be in Young Life ministry for my whole life. That was my plan. And probably 8 years ago, God switched that up quite a bit and introduced us to the idea of justice through fair trade. And we started working overseas. And then 2 or 3 years ago, he extended that vision much further and said, I don't want you just to be helping people develop small cottage industries that, you know, allow them to earn a fair wage. I want you to help people realize who I've made them to be and to empower them to live out the purpose I've put into their lives. I want you to help them learn to dream again, regardless of what trauma and what things have come against them. And I want you to do that through business. And so we wrote a curriculum about a year ago that we've been taking around the world, helping people to understand more about who God has made them to be and about the way that they can rise up and be empowered to provide for their families and to create change in their own communities without dependence on foreign aid or without dependence on Western help, essentially. And so that is what we have been doing for about the last year. Now, this year, when we went to Rwanda, we were invited into this incredible, incredible community. And I had no idea who we were going to serve, honestly, when we left. I'd heard a little bit about it, but we were there at an invitation from a really dear friend who's been working in Rwanda for years. And I just trusted her and trusted that God was inviting us to go with her. And then we showed up and we realized that we were going to be offering business training to a group of 37 people that were living in one of six reconciliation villages in Rwanda through an organization called Prison Fellowship Rwanda. And I really didn't know what that meant. I heard reconciliation village. I thought the whole country is in a process of reconciliation. What does that really mean? And we got there and came to find out that a reconciliation village is where this ministry has intentionally invited or created kind of a community of Hutu perpetrators of the genocide and paired them up with their victims' families and invited them to live together in peace in this village. And it's just, I could weep just being there and talking about it. It's just this incredible thing that can only come from the Father, that people who have destroyed one another's lives can come together in forgiveness and in love and in acceptance and seek after full restoration and healing together as a community. And I think this is really the only way that these people who have been perpetrated against through the genocide and those who were actually the perpetrators themselves could find total healing is when they come together and live life in one place. So we were there and we showed up to this first day of training and there are 37 eager faces and I can't tell who's who, I mean, honestly. And we're in this classroom and it's the end of the dry season and we're registering people and writing down their names and asking them if they have a business or what kind of business they'd like to start, asking them how many children they have, how old they are, if they're married, if they're single, if they're widowed. And then, you know, as that process goes on and on and on, we kind of reach the end of it, and this spontaneous dance party breaks out. And it's just the reflection of who these people are. And they just are so excited to be there and so excited about the opportunity in front of them to learn something that they're desperately desiring that they just stand up and start worshiping. There's no instruments. There are no, you know, overhead projectors. There are no words. I mean, people are just dancing and singing. And it is one, I mean, I've been to Africa a lot and I've been to other places in the world where people really worship in a powerful way. And I've never seen anything like this. And I think it's because of what they were worshiping. They really know the power of God to restore and to heal and to deliver and to save. They know how mighty their God is. And so they're dancing and singing and they haven't had rain in 3 months and crops are about to fail and they're so hungry. And it just starts pouring down rain. I mean, just pouring rain as these people are singing. And so that, of course, just ramps up the fervor of the room. I wish I could take you all there with me because this is going to be in my memory forever. And they are just rejoicing as this rain deafens us on the tin roof and it almost drowns out the singing. The rain is so loud. And it was just this beautiful moment of God's love and his provision for his people. So we do the training and it is evident that these people are really, really eager to learn. The collective kind of average income in the room was $16 a month per household, which is well below some of the poorest statistics in the world. I mean, they say 1.2 billion people live on less than a dollar a day. Well, these people live on around 50 cents a day for their entire families. And they have no idea how to improve their circumstances on their own, but they so hope in God. And so we trained, and some of them thought they wouldn't even make it to graduation day because they'd never been through a formal class in their lives. A lot of the class were illiterate, and they showed up day after day after day, and we played games, and we ran relay races, and we did obstacle courses, and we learned business, and it was really fun. And towards the end of it, they said some amazing things. You know, I had a lady come up to me and say, I finally understand that I can start a business, and I understand what I need to do in order to save up the capital to begin my business, and I'm going to manage my money well. I want to read you some of the quotes from these people. I had it sort of pulled up, but I'm going to read it off of my phone. So from Sephora, who's 55, she said, at first I didn't understand how to make a business, but now it is easier. At first when I was making a business, I didn't check the income and expenses. And now I can know if my project is going well or not. And then Asanat said, I learned how to help my business grow in order to help my family life improve. It was helpful to learn that I can start with what I have now. I don't have to wait to have all the money at once. And then Providence, I love this. She said, sowing much will harvest much. I'll start saving money to build capital for my new business, and I will now be able to save for medical insurance and medicine for my family. But the thing that humbled me the most, I mean, it's neat that people get to learn business, and it's neat that that can really transform their lives in powerful ways. But what they walked away with more than anything, what they said on their surveys at the end of the time over and over again that they loved learning the most, was to love their neighbor as themselves, which just blew me away and completely humbled me, because I'm sitting here in a reconciliation village where people are living in harmony after, you know, after 10 years post-genocide, and they have elected Hutu perpetrators as leaders within the village. I mean, they have really sought wholeness. And they still say that the most important thing that they can learn is how to love their neighbor as themselves and how to live in harmony and live in peace. So Philomena said, it is good to be in harmony with others, and everyone should know that. And Atanasi said, I've been changed because from now on, I will begin to respect others and love them as I love myself. This behavior you have to have when you are in business. And it just humbled me that that's what they took away more than anything else. I mean, it's kind of amazing. So we left that place and kind of felt like we were walking on sacred ground, really. And we headed over to Uganda next. And in that place, we were greeted by 95 women that were from 31 different villages, and they were all the village leaders. And of this 95, they were all single mothers. Most of them had been either widowed, or their husbands had left them, or they had they'd been divorced of some, or some of them had been, unfortunately, had been raped. And so they were single mothers living in the village in Uganda. And these women, so many of them reported that they had zero monthly income. Zero, which I can't get my head around that. They're subsistence farmers, and so they grow what they eat. And these women, they came in so carrying such a weight and such a burden, because women that don't have the covering of a man in their lives are some of the most oppressed and vulnerable women in the world. I mean, there's a reason that James says true religion is caring for the widow and the orphan. And I've come to really know and respect that working overseas, because these women, their land, like if their husband dies, their mother-in-law will come and chase them off of their land and take the land back for the family. If their husband leaves them, then they forfeit all rights to any property that's within the valley or within their family. And yet they retain the rights of the children and still their responsibility to raise and educate the children, but they have nothing to do it with and no family support. And these women are desperate. They're desperate. And yet there's still this tenacity and joy and perseverance that is so beautiful to behold in them. And so that's who we were training this time around. We're a group of single women who had you know, 5 to 7 children apiece, most of them. And at the beginning of the class, we always do a session on dreaming big. And so that's one of our favorite things to teach, because so often when you're living in survival mode every day, there isn't this ability or luxury to dream for a better future for yourselves. The dream is squelched the second it tries to rise up, because it's like, well, how could I really ever achieve that? That could never be possible for me. So why go through the heartache of even having a dream? And so that's what we teach for our first 2 sessions with people, is how to begin to dream again for themselves and for their families. And then the next piece is we talk about obstacles to that dream, hence the obstacle course. And these women, their obstacles across the board, all of them said, my obstacle is capital. I don't have the capital I need to start a business. And we really challenged them in that, because we said, that's not your obstacle. Your obstacle is not that you don't have any money. Your obstacle is what's keeping you from not having any money. So let's work on that this week. And so we worked with them over the week, and it was just amazing to watch the light bulbs come on as these women recognized that the reason that they struggle so much to run a business or to keep a business sustainable or to put their children into school or to have a savings account is because no one has ever taught them how to manage money, ever, ever, ever. And so the second they get anything, they say, I eat everything I get. That's their way of saying, I spend it all. I eat everything I get. And so if their child falls sick and they happen to have a few chickens that they're using as a business, they'll sell all the chickens to pay for the child's medicine, which is what any of us would do in their place probably as well if we didn't have a savings account. But now they have no business, and now they have no replicable income coming in. And so we work with them over and over again on how to not eat all that you have and how to put something aside little by little over time to save for your children's futures, to be able to have that emergency fund whenever something bad happens, or to plan ahead for school fees that are going to be due in 3 months' time. And so it's amazing to watch that simple teaching and how it impacts every aspect of their life. Because all of a sudden now, if they start a business, they can actually learn to record keep. And so they know if their business is profitable or not. And then they can know what they need to do to make small changes so it can be profitable. And then they know when they gain profits that they should save some of those profits, or they should reinvest some of them into their businesses. And so it was just cool to watch them kind of grasp these concepts of, oh my gosh, we can save for ourselves, and to see how empowering that was for them, that they all of a sudden knew they could dream again. So here's what one of the girls named Sarah said. And Sarah was this girl sitting in the front row throughout the training, and her table leader was a little bit frustrated with her because she wasn't super engaged throughout the week. She was a little bit grumpy every day when she came to class. She wasn't the easiest person to work with. She didn't supply answers. But I did Sarah's survey or her interview at the end of the course, and here's what she said. She said, for me, the most challenging thing about the course was how to have a dream. I never had it in my mind because I never had any way of starting a business before. But now I know many things. I've learned how to start a business and how to be free with others because I am a fearful person. I have 2 children and I'm a single mother, and there is no land for me. At times, my brothers attack me to chase me away with my children. So it is my dream to work hard selling produce so that I can get land for my children. And it was just amazing to hear that after a week of almost looking at this girl and wondering if she was getting anything and if she was going to walk away with anything, that is what God had done in her life, was show her that she is someone that is capable of doing a business, and that she can dream on behalf of her children, and that she can work hard and rise up and provide for her family. Because when her poverty decreases, then her vulnerability also decreases dramatically. If she has land, her brothers can't chase her away if she's the owner of the land, and then her children are safe as well. If she has money, then all of a sudden she is not at risk for being exploited in the way that many of these women are exploited. She gains status and respect in her community. So it's a very practical thing that we get to be a part of. And it was not our idea by any means. But I love that God allows us to touch people's lives in this way. But for me, I think the humbling thing for me has been coming back. And this time around, I've had a really difficult time getting back into life here. I've really missed being there. And I think I've had some really good counsel over the past 2 days of what's going on in my heart. And I think the realization is we can be there as an organization and as a ministry, and we can invest in partnering with God to see their poverty relieved and to see literal good news come to the poor and to see them free from what's oppressing them. And we can be a part of that. But at the same time, God is highlighting to me my own poverty and my own lack spiritually, my own lack relationally and emotionally, that these people are ministering to me the entire time I'm with them. And when I come home, I see that lack of, like my spiritual poverty becomes very evident in what I'm lacking. Because this culture is so relational, and this culture does life in family or family units and in village units. They do life together. And this culture knows their need for God. And this culture worships God in spite of any circumstance that comes their way and trusts and believes God to provide everything that they need. He is their greatest hope. And when I come home, I recognize all the things in my life that keep me from communing with my Father. And I came home and I thought, I'm just really depressed. I just really can't get into it. I'm just not really excited about what's in front of me. What is going on? And so I did the American thing. When you don't feel happy, you try to fix that by making yourself happy. So I go to the things that make me happy. I go outside to play. I plug into work because I get a lot of validation from work. I spend time with my husband. I seek out friends. I read books. I watch movies. I drink wine. I did all these things that are supposed to make me happy. And I'm still just not feeling it. I'm just not getting there. And the one thing I did not do is go and sit with my Father and go and be in communion with him. And so I was speaking to a dear friend and mentor yesterday who was on the trip with me. And I was like, Bev, what is my problem? And she's like, here is the deal that I am learning. She's like, in the garden, we were in total communion with God. We were in total communion with the Father. And ever since that break, we have been longing for that communion. And when I spend time with my friends in Africa, I live in better communion with the Father because they model that for me and they invite me into that. And so pieces of my poverty are met there in ways that I have to work, not work, but I have to live differently. I have to make different choices to do that here in this country. And so I think that has been, for me, the greatest takeaway is, whew, come back home and sit with the Father and be in communion with his people and seek out fellowship, because that is the only place to get my needs met. And so I realize, in being in a reconciliation village in Rwanda, there's such a deep need that we all have for reconciliation. God has made us for a ministry of reconciliation, and that is reconciliation to him, and it is reconciliation to one another, and it is reconciliation to the earth. And I need to pursue reconciliation in every aspect of my life, in Africa, in Pakistan and India and Latin America, and the believers I know in those places teach me about that. So even as we seek as a ministry to go and offer the little that God has given us to offer, we realize that reconciliation between us is happening as we spend time with people in those places, and we are restored and we are made whole even as they are being restored and being made whole, because that is God's plan for us, is that we would be one as he and his son are one. And so that is what we are seeking as we move forward. Okay, so back to the whole Indie Gives thing. I would love, if any of you all feel like God would invite you to join us in any capacity, the invitation is open. I believe wholeheartedly that God gives each of us pieces of his kingdom and pieces of his resources to be able to steward and to do that with wisdom as he directs us. And the things that we invest into and we sow into return a harvest, reap a harvest. And so each of us are investing in different things, in different ministries, in different places. And you get to enjoy the satisfaction of partaking of the harvest when you invest in those things. So if this harvest of seeing people sustainably empowered to leave poverty and to know who God has made them to be, and to learn to dream again around the world, if that is something that God has invited you to partake of and to enjoy part of that harvest as you sow into it, then we invite you to give to Yobel. We're trying to gather up a $500 matching grant. That's kind of the minimum matching grant that we can bring into the Give campaign. And we gather that before the campaign starts. So our deadline for that is September 5th. And then that goes into our profile so that when the campaign starts November 1st and people all over the Pikes Peak region start contributing to different nonprofits, then they can see, oh, Yobel has, you know, backers. They have people that believe in the ministry or that they're doing. And my dollar goes further because there's a matching grant in place. So when people give after November 1st, if we gather a certain amount of matching grants ahead of time, then, you know, maybe their dollar's worth $1.50 or $2. So that's what we were thinking about when we invited this congregation to join us, is if this congregation could gather and help us to get a matching grant that would help us leverage donations as we seek to raise funds for next year, starting in November. Brian, am I missing anything? Okay. So yeah, that's it. That's the invitation. Thanks so much for letting me share. Thanks for supporting me, sending me, praying for me, and helping me figure this all out with Jesus.
So good. So the way that this would work then for us is if you were to contribute through New Covenant, then it's as though New Covenant is giving that money to Yobel, because you are New Covenant. This isn't a thing. You're people, and you belong to one another in fellowship. And so we dismantle the organizational part of it in concept so that we can move as an organism. There is the organizational part of it, which means that if you were to contribute to the mission of Yobel, you can do that by taking one of the envelopes that's at either of the boxes marked tithe and offerings, and that's where we give. That's where we give to this fellowship, to this ministry, to the work that God's doing here. That's where your tithe goes in, and that's also where the offerings, which I make that distinction between tithes and offerings. We are offering now to Yobel a portion of what God has given us, that we pray and we ask the Holy Spirit, what offering would you like for me to give to support not just another thing, but this is Sarah. These are friends that we know, and these are people that are facilitating a work that is far-reaching. And so if you were to take that envelope and where it says missions, you were to put the word Yobel, which is up there on the board, then all of that money would be accumulated then, and we would hopefully be able to give at least $500 by September 5th to Yobel as a fellowship. See what I'm saying? Again, it's not insulating you from her and her from you, or this thing from that thing. It's like we are in this together because we're part of a fellowship together. And so that's the gist of it. I sure appreciate you sharing all of that. And also appreciate you bringing just this finery over here. This is an example of what Yobel Market offers. And these goods right here were created by the people who now have businesses in these various places all over the world. And Yobel provides a mechanism for those products to be sold in country here. And so that you can take a look at that. I'm assuming some of that's for sale. Okay. You see how this is all kind of working together? So great. And I love the longing of your heart for real community. Like, that's not born out of any human endeavor, but the Spirit of Christ standing between us, giving us the capacity to love deeply and to love well. And that's really what, it's more than just an aspiration. This is our mandate as God's people, that we are to be reconciled one to another, that we're to submit one to another, that we're to live life together in fellowship. And with that, we create opportunity, invitation, and we also create space for other people's voices to be heard. And this is really important for me. And this is why I'm going to ask Allison to come up now. You thought you were off the hook. No, you're not off the hook. Come right here. After worship, Allison said, I think the Lord gave me an encouragement for the fellowship here this morning.
I feel like this is for the body as a whole, but also individually for one in particular person that's facing a situation. But I felt like God told me that extending grace is not weakness. It's a gift that allows the Spirit to touch the souls of men and for heaven to invade the earth. So I just wanted to challenge us as a body to do that very thing.
To extend grace.
Yes.
Okay, good. Can anyone relate to that? Can you raise your hand and we want to pray with you? Can anyone relate to being in a situation right now where you're really challenged? Do I extend grace? How does that look? Will that be an expression of weakness? Will I be enabling someone? All of those sort of dynamics that roll around in our hearts when we wrestle with this idea of how do we extend grace in a way that literally releases that individual, that person, into the loving care of God, and God gets to work with them and towards them in the ways and only the ways that God can. That's grace. So anybody relate to that? Okay, we've got a couple ones. Keep your hands up. Here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to close out our time by letting you get some prayer, by letting the fellowship here come around you, just bless you with wisdom, bless you with the grace that's needed for just this situation.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you have any questions, please drop us a line at nccfcolorado@mac.com.